Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, back once again for a Selection Sunday special. We're going to be talking to a handful of coaches whose teams found out their fate for the NCAA tournament. But first, we're going to talk to Loyola Athletic Director Donna Woodruff, who is the chair of the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee, a five-person panel that over the course of the last several weeks has met several times and certainly over the last weekend has locked themselves in a room, scrubbed the data, and come to the conclusion of this 18-team field. Ms. Woodruff, thank you for joining us on the podcast. How do you describe the experience?
Yeah, thank you for having me. How do I describe the experience? It is eye-opening. It's interesting. It's informative. It's 2 days where we debate every different piece of the teams that are in consideration. And at the end of the day, it's collaborative. And it's a good group that you know, works together to try and get this where it needs to be for the tournament.
From a big picture standpoint, one of the things as a bracket projectionist, it's probably not the right term for it, prognosticator, whatever you would want to ascribe, that gave me pause is that, you know, having done this on a year-over-year basis for more than a decade, I knew that because of the unique nature of the selection criteria in 21 and the fact that there was no tournament in 2020 meant that this five-person group had never really engaged in analyzing this set of data before, whereas for the preceding 10 plus years, that hadn't been the case. Certainly people rotate on and off, but there is a little bit more year-to-year continuity. And as a result, it was hard to know how you guys were going to value different criteria versus each other. Do you mind just giving us a little bit of a baseline for how RPI compared to top five wins to top 20 wins to bad losses?
Yeah, no, it's a question. I do think that, you know, most of the committee members, however long they've been doing it, start almost from the same spot every year, right? They look at, okay, the RPI is the one thing that we have across the board that is the same. It's the same formula for everybody. So let's start there. So I would say, yes, that's where we start. And then we look at that and we say, okay, you know, what is clear? And in this particular case, you know, the number one, the number two, I think we all felt that was clear. And then we said, okay, statistically, things start to get a little bit closer as we move along through the RPI. And the information that has been shared with us from a statistical standpoint is that, you know, maybe some of the margins get a little bit negligible. So then you have to start looking at that other selection criteria. And that's what we started to do. I mean, we have paper upon paper upon paper as far as, you know, looking at everybody's strength of schedule, RPI, significant wins, which would be over the top 20 teams, significant losses. And then we kind of, you know, broke it all down from there and made those comparisons to see who would be out and who ultimately ended up being in. And if we had to get to it, we also eventually, in looking at those same wins and losses, did look at some head-to-head competition if we had to, for lack of a better description, break a tie or something along those lines.
So I believe on the selection show, you said that it was three, you were evaluating essentially five teams for three spots. And I just want to start by confirming, does that suggest... I'm sorry, 6-4. Okay, so
correct.
Was Virginia one of those?
Yes.
Okay, is it fair to assume that they were the third to last team in based on how the seeding broke out?
You know what? Here's Terry, what I would say, and I know I understand how people want to sit there and say, okay, this one versus that one, etc. We looked at all six, and what ultimately became clear is the two that would be out, right? So it became, look at all six, who are the two that are out? I know you want to say, were they the third to the last in or whatever, but we were really at that point trying to get down to the four because that's how many spots we had left.
Understood. So specifically with respect to Duke, you said that their significant losses were hard to overcome. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. So, right, so they had their 11-6, they had six losses, and three of those were outside of the top 20. And I mean, that was significantly different than anybody else who was being considered for an at-large spot.
And then by a similar token, Notre Dame was a team that you said didn't have the number of significant wins. They had three that warranted inclusion. Ohio State also had three significant wins. And you mentioned that when it came down to breaking a tie, head-to-head was a consideration. So is that a factor? Yep. The Buckeyes win over the Fighting Irish, a significant factor in that choice?
Yeah, you're right in that they both had three top 20 wins. Ohio State, did have a win over a team that is in the tournament in Harvard. And then when you looked at, yes, the head-to-head, quite honestly, Notre Dame lost to both Ohio State and UVA, meaning that UVA was in our pod there that we were debating about, and Ohio State beat both Notre Dame and Harvard, which obviously were in that, in that pod as well that we were looking at.
So,
does that answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, and I'll get to this, I wanted to go a little bit more in terms of kind of some of the seeding choices and whether there was any difficulty there when it came to that. I mean, I looked at it as like the 3-4-5, and I think that, my projection matched what ended up being your decisions. Was there anything about that, middle of the top eight seeding choice that became difficult, particularly having Rutgers at six, given that they, maybe lacked the volume of quality wins of 7 and 8, and they didn't have a top five win, but they had a superior RPI in contrast to Brown and Cornell?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, even though, as you said, not even though, but you ended up similar to how our committee did end up. Yeah, of course, we did play that all out. We played out all of those, right? So the Penn, Yale, Princeton, Rutgers, Cornell, and looked at them all. And while I think your question was specifically, about Rutgers, we did look at, there are many more significant wins for the Penn, the Yale, and the Princeton at the end of the day, over Rutgers, if that's what you're looking for.
Sure, yeah. No, I think that the line of demarcation was pretty clear between those three and then 6, 7, and 8. And then I think there was probably, you could slice up both 3, 4, 5 and 6, 7, 8 within a little bit, I don't want to say as a matter of preference, but you could make reasonable arguments kind of supporting each line of thought. So kind of understand where you're coming from there. I mentioned just taking a step back and a bigger look at this. I mean, the exclusion of Notre Dame and Duke certainly is going to draw a lot of attention because they're programs with big fan bases, and a lot of people had high expectations for their ability to compete on the field were they to enter the tournament. And for me, I look at this less as individuals having a job to do, so to speak, more so as, is the process optimal? And, having gone through this by being a part of the committee through an unprecedented period of time and now having chaired this season, one of the questions that I ask is now the right time to reconsider the selection criteria, particularly because men's basketball did it leading into the 2019 NCAA tournament? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I know that will clearly be something that is debated, and I do not pretend to be the expert in the statistical part of things. So somebody would need to come up with what the replacement would be. I mean, every year there's someone that argues that RPI is not the best metric to use. And then there's a whole other group of people that says, yeah, but you can't be completely subjective and the eye test, et cetera. So sometimes it just depends on where your team falls in those scenarios. Do I think it's worth taking a look at? Yes. Do I have the solution, or do I think any of the other folks, I don't know, maybe Terry, you have a possible solution to look at. Do I think right now that I've seen anybody that's offering a different model? I would imagine that you know, the folks that would have to look at that would welcome the opportunity to scrutinize a different formula.
Got it. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, certainly as I've written about a handful of times, I mean, it's an important question and it deserves to be considered. So I'm happy to hear that you think that there's openness to that conversation going forward.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think that anybody who's trying to come up, I said this earlier to some folks, is that, you know, that the data itself is objective, right? But the fact that everybody doesn't play the same number of games against the exact same teams and in the exact same conditions and blah, 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 there's no way that can be 100% what it spits out. They wouldn't need us as human beings, right? We wouldn't need to be here as a committee. But given that right now, and I'm not sure we can ever come up with a formula that gets rid of it unless we do all those things, play the same number of games in the same places, you know, et cetera. You know, you have to have some human involvement. And I think that's why there's five people. And that's why we use the RAC to give us their input from a coach's perspective, you know, et cetera, to help us make the process as good as possible in the end.
Sure. Well, I mean, we could talk endlessly about the considerations that went into each individual choice. But I appreciate the overview that you provided. And, you know, certainly the next 3 weeks are about hosting this tournament and crowning a champion. And that's where the focus will be. But I do anticipate that once summer rolls around and these conversations about large scale infrastructure start happening, there will be a conversation about what is the right way to pick and seed the tournament field. And, you know, I'm interested in following how the conversation unfolds.
Yeah. Sounds great. I know you'll be following along and any input is helpful. So appreciate you taking some time to talk tonight.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Harvard head coach Jerry Byrne. Hearst Crimson are in off of the bubble. They're taking on Rutgers at USAC Field on Sunday. Coach Byrne, you and I spoke after your loss to Yale in overtime of the rivalry game. And at that point, you didn't know what the future held, but you knew that you were going to be practicing with your team. What has it been like over the course of the last 10 days leading up to Selection Sunday?
You know, try not to think about it. You know, I think there's a lot of quote unquote experts out there doing a variety of analyses, and you can kind of head down that rabbit hole. And I can't say I was immune to it, but I tried to do my best to avoid it and enjoy the time this week with our guys. We had our team impact signee Braxton came to practice once or twice this week. We did a pizza bowl game where we, you know, got uniforms and played that and had a great meal after that. So, you know, the finals and study days had started. So we wanted to, you know, help our guys be psychologically prepared for their exams. So getting an hour and a half of work in each day and have that time together. And we played our intra-squad scrimmage on Friday and got together tonight. So we were hopeful that we were maintaining our IQ and our conditioning while at the same time, you know, taking pleasure and joy in being together.
What was it like when you guys were together watching the selection show and you saw your name come up on a line?
You know, I had kind of walked around the corner behind some lockers and I was, you know, getting notes ready for a different kind of presentation. I was hopeful, but I was, to be honest with you, I was more cynical than not. Not because I didn't think we deserved to be there, but sometimes the easiest solution would be for, you know, a group of people in a room, men and women, you know, reasonable and rational people, to come up with a variety of outcomes. And I thought in a year where there was a lot of teams with 3 and 4 top 20 wins, that it would have been easy for them to default to the RPI as the easiest solution. But I was also hopeful that, as in some years past, that wins would be valued. And we turned up to have 2 wins against seeded teams and a top 5 win against Princeton. And, you know, that swayed the day. And I know that that's, you know, people don't like that or might not be happy about it, but you know, that's served other teams and other leagues in the past as well. And so I'm glad it benefited us this year, but I know that's hurtful for other teams and other programs. I'm just happy that our really young team is getting to spend another week together. But as far as when it happened, I was kind of around the corner getting my thoughts together about what I was going to say to my team if it
so
didn't happen.
You just hear them explode? Like, did you even hear them say Harvard?
I heard them explode. I heard them just leap out of their chairs and start screaming and dancing around the locker room. And I came around the corner and, you know, kind of witnessed an ebullient explosion of, you know, pure energy and joy and love and hope and just exuberance that, you know, only 18 and 19 and 20 year olds can deliver in a moment like that.
So what'd you say?
You were after unprepared. I stopped jumping around after I stopped jumping around in the mosh pit with them, I told them that you know, we have another week together and that it's going to be really hard for them to study for their exams tonight and write their papers that are coming due tomorrow or the next few days. Our guys, we have exams all started last week and they go all the way up until Friday, which I know that's true at a lot of schools. You know, what I told them that was that we earned it, you know, that the wins mattered and that, you know, the work that we did in this last week wasn't in vain. And that, you know, this is a team that's good enough to go to the Final Four.
What do you know about Rutgers?
You know, what do I know about Rutgers? I was able to, you know, watch the some of the Big Ten championship game. And I watched the Ohio State game as well, the semifinal. You know, listen, super skilled, you know, they're a veteran team, not just in age, but in experience and the volume of games that they've played together, that they have, you know, a good amount of transfers and that they've over the last couple of years have, you know, culturally been able to integrate into, you know, the way that they play. And so, you know, I think that they're a super confident and prideful program. Brian's done an unbelievable job, particularly over the last 5 or 6 years. And I know they had to kind of wait for their time to get into the tournament and they had some disappointing years. So I think the kind of the disappointment of the past, it really kind of fuels the way that they play. And so they got a mixture of really big and athletic guys and short and shifty guys. And they're really good in transition. They got some two-way middies and they do early offense really well. But, you know, I'm still, you know, watching as a, not necessarily a fan, but watching sitting on your couch when you don't necessarily have a vested interest in the game is different than when you're watching it and cutting film and looking for strengths and weaknesses and opportunities for you to take advantage of. So we just started that process.
Well, we'll let you get back to it. We appreciate your time on the Inside the Cross podcast. A incredible night, for lack of a better way of putting it, and certainly enjoyed the opportunity to hear your side of the story.
Well, I'm glad I can kind of harbor a consistent, salient thought because I'm still dumbfounded, but, you know, thrilled and, you know, as excited as my guys.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Penn head coach Mike Murphy, whose Quakers topped Yale 16-9 to win the Ivy League championship on Sunday afternoon. And they had a little bit of an arduous trip home, got back to the Athletic Center about 15 minutes after the selection show started, but have pieced together that they'll be hosting Richmond as a 3 seed in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Coach Murphy, congratulations. Real quick, can you just kind of summarize what that win over Yale meant in the Ivy League championship?
Yeah, thanks, Terry. It was a lot of fun, first and foremost. Really proud of our guys and kind of how we responded to going down 2-0 and just, you know, playing a game 36 hours after the semifinal game against Brown and stuff. and, you know, having, you know, lost to Yale in overtime and had so many one goal games with them over the years to win in that fashion certainly felt good.
And so turning your attention to the bracket, obviously coming off of a pair of meaningful wins over Brown on Friday night and then over Yale on Sunday afternoon, had to feel good about what it meant. You knew you were in the tournament with an AQ, and certainly all the metrics and indicators were pointing in your direction. Were you surprised by a 3 seed, or is that what your expectation was?
To be honest with you, I didn't really have any expectations either way. Felt like with our body of work, we were likely to host, and, you know, made sure we were prepared for that. But, you know, I kind of have an idea how these things work, and there's so many things that can happen with upsets and different things. And, you know, with just the Ivy League championship and the Patriot League championship on Sunday, there weren't that many variables left, but, still crazy things happen, when they get in the room and have to make final decisions. So, we were certainly prepared for a lot of different things. We didn't put a lot of stock into any one thing. We didn't start and film on anybody. We just, you know, wanted to play well and control what we could control, just like we did, you know, against Dartmouth a couple weeks ago and against Albany and stuff. Getting into the Ivy League tournament was out of our hands, and so we just focused on what we could do and have just kind of continued to play well since then.
What do you know about Richmond?
Very little. I know they're very well coached. I know the kid Lanchberry is very, very good. Watched film on them, I guess, in 2020. We used to watch the Maryland-Richmond film because they would always play each other before we played Maryland. So, but, you know, very faint memories of that. So just downloaded a couple games, and we'll start looking at some of that tonight.
What message do you send to your team in order to get them to reset and refocus and regard this season as essentially a new second season?
Yeah, I mean, we just, you know, met briefly after we heard about the brackets a little bit and just, you know, said, enjoy this feeling that, you know, we accomplished one of our goals for the year, but we have another one in front of us, and we need to stay humble and hungry to keep getting better and clean up some things we didn't do well against Yale and then begin the preparation process for Richmond. So we have a pretty good group of leaders and seniors, so I think they will take that to heart and hope we get to work this week and put our best foot forward over the weekend against Richmond.
Well, certainly it's going to be an interesting and entertaining game of two teams that, to me, have a little bit of a similar style, play a very disciplined brand of lacrosse. You kind of have similar color schemes. So I'm actually looking forward to this matchup just from the standpoint of aesthetically. It feels like a appropriate clash. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I agree. And it should be a fun game.
Well, Coach Murphy, congratulations again on the Ivy League championship, and look forward to watching your team take the field on Saturday afternoon.
Great. Yeah, thanks a lot, Terry. I appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Ohio State head coach Nick Myers, whose Buckeyes are in off of the bubble. At 10-5, they head to number 7 seed Cornell in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They take on the Big Red on Sunday, May 15th. Coach Myers, congratulations. What was the reaction like among your team when you found out the news that your season had second life?
Thanks, Terry. Yeah, the men were thrilled. We were together in the locker room, and, you know, being one of the last teams on there and seeing Harvard come up right before, there was, you could kind of feel a lot of emotion and tension in the room, and then to see your name come up, just excitement, enthusiasm. The men were thrilled and really fired up.
It's a good point. I believe you were the last name revealed. So to have Harvard before and to have a head-to-head win against them, did people perk up a little bit thinking that even though there's only one spot left, it very realistically it might be for us?
I don't think there was enough time to really process. You know, I think we saw the two spots. It was the end of the bracket. One of the last two spots went to Harvard. You know, we hadn't seen some of the names that have been talked about come up yet. So when Harvard's went up there, I think it was more of just a moment of pause and uncertainty. And then, you know, within seconds, and our name was revealed. So, I'm not even sure I know what I processed in that moment. Just right after that, I saw our name. It was a lot of hugs and excitement. And then got in the team room and get right to work.
And certainly between Thursday and today, there was more time to process, you know, coming away from that loss to Rutgers in the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament in College Park. What was the mood among the team? Were you optimistic? Were you concerned? Or did you understand that it was outside of your control and you're just going to take whatever came your way?
Yeah, I think we were disappointed, obviously, at the loss. You know, that's why you work hard to get a one or two seat. You know, I think our men were beat up. And you know, you look around some of the teams that have had a bye week at the end of their season or a week off for finals. I think having the finals playing teammates in 6 days and then going right into a Thursday night game, we kind of felt like we ran out of gas in that second half versus a good Rutgers team. And, you know, that being said, I think there was optimism out to the game. I don't think anyone felt like afterward there was no goodbyes. Let's see how this thing shakes out. I'm really proud of these men. I mean, Terry, this is, you know, to come off a year where, you know, we had our challenges in the all Big Ten schedule, certainly, but, you know, we made our schedule even tougher. This is the toughest schedule I've ever been a part of here at Ohio State. You know, our strength of schedule reflects that, you know, a 10-win season, some really strong out-of-conference wins, as you mentioned, and really strong play, you know, winning four of our last six and playing really well in the Big Ten. I think the men have a lot of confidence. And, you know, we felt like, you know, we were certainly in the mix going into the weekend.
And you get a rematch against a Big Red team that you've already played in Schoolcraft Stadium. What is your reaction to getting a second bite at that apple?
Yeah, well, you know, certainly, like I said, you're kind of still processing, you know, the moment first, and then you shift gears quickly into the opportunity. And they've had a great year. You know, Coach Busick has done an outstanding job with that group. You know, I think both teams have probably evolved a little bit since where we were when we played them, you know, at that point. You know, so it'll be interesting to study the film and see how they've changed. And maybe I'm sure they'll do the same to us. But there is a familiarity of being there once already this year for our men. Obviously, we were disappointed with the outcome. But we're excited to get to work and certainly do everything we can to put our best foot forward next weekend.
And just to kind of build off of the idea of putting your best foot forward, obviously with 15 games under your belt, you've seen many different versions of your team take the field. What does the best game from Ohio State look like at this point in the season?
Well, I appreciate that. I do think the men have a really good understanding of our identity, you know, and I think you saw that a little bit of that in the first half of Rutgers. You know, I mean, we were up 7-4 and that's a team that averages 16 goals a game, you know. So I think you saw some glimpses of it Thursday night, just not enough of it over the course of 60 minutes. But, you know, we're getting good goalie play. We need to be efficient at the faceoff X. I think those two things for us really set the edge. Defensively, we got to play, you know, with that edge that we have. You know, we've won all 10 games when we've won the ground ball war. You know, in the five games we lost, we've it's been a deficit. So, you know, I think that really speaks to, you know, the effort and the freshness of our team. When we're fresh and we're ready to go, you know, that ground ball war seems to go our way. And so that's a key to our victory. And then on the offensive end, you know, it's being consistent with what we do, you know, and in terms of the pick play, the variations of things, certainly, you know, different ways we've seen every defense thrown at number two, you know. So we've kind of seen it all at this point. Now it's just a matter of kind of settling into a game, getting a sense of how teams want to play us, and then making the adjustments offensively. And, you know, we're shooting the ball pretty well. We're, I think, 3 or 4 in the country in shooting percentage. So, like, taking the right shots and making sure shots fall, that's kind of all part of the blueprint, you know, and then being efficient in the ride and clear game and making sure special teams are buttoned up.
Well, it's certainly going to be a great matchup. It was a really exciting and interesting game when you met in, I guess, early to mid-March, and I'm looking forward to checking out part 2.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Terry. Thanks for saying that, and appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks, Coach Myers. Congratulations again on making the NCAA tournament, and good luck preparing this week to take on Cornell next weekend. And the Inside the Cross podcast continues with Yale head coach Andy Shea, whose Bulldogs are the 4 seed in the NCAA tournament, taking on St. Joe's on Saturday at Reese Stadium. Coach Shea, what was your reaction to the bracket reveal?
I was a little shocked. You know, surprised to see, you know, 6 Ivies in, but, you know, I think it was, you know, a case can be made for any of the teams, I think, that got in or out at the end there. So, I'm not in that room and I don't know what they talked about, but, you know, I've heard the arguments for all of them and every one of them is compelling, I feel like.
So, coming off of a loss in the Ivy League championship to Penn, you kind of evaluate the film, understand that you're very likely to be included in the NCAA tournament. You're probably going to be hosting a game. What is your mindset and what is your team's mindset going into the selection show when it really comes down to when are we playing, where are we playing, and who are we playing?
You know, it's been we've lost in the Ivy Finals last three times now, and the selection show has been probably the most somber of any of them. So they don't do the watch party for us. So our guys are still smarting from that one. We got our butts kicked pretty good. You know, and even though we know who we're playing and we're excited that we're in, the first job at hand is tomorrow to watch film and kind of, you know, go through the black box and see what went wrong and what we need to improve on. So that's been the model so far, and it's going to continue tomorrow.
What do you know about St. Joe's?
I don't know much. We've overlapped a little bit, played a few common opponents. You know, we know those guys, you know, a little bit. That's really about it. I don't know enough to tell you anything about what they do.
One of the things that is the hallmark of this team is they have one of the best faceoff guys in the country in Zach Cole. You've been on both sides of the faceoff equation. What is it like to take on a team where they have a faceoff guy who's gone 70% or better in 70% of his team's games?
Yeah, I mean, that's a daunting task for sure. And I think that, you know, like you said, we've been on the other side of that, and, you know, our guy has had days like that this year. So it's going to be a huge challenge, and we look at it like it's a team, you know, it's a team effort up at the midline, and we're just going to attack it like that. So he's obviously very good, and he's an All-American, you know, for a reason. So we know the challenge ahead of us.
Opening up the aperture a little bit, this time last year you had to watch 16 other teams find out their fate for the NCAA tournament. So did five of your Ivy League head coach colleagues who found out their fate that they were going to be able to continue their season tonight. What does it mean for your programs? What does it mean for the league to not have played in 2021 and to have this level of success in 2022?
I think it's just been, it's been a storybook kind of year, I think, for the league. And people want to just attach it to the fact that we sat out and all that. And I guess, you know, that is definitely a storyline, but I'm not sure how correlated they are. I think it's great. I think it's kind of cool that, you know, just the Richie Moran passed away, six Ivies got bids. I think that's pretty cool.
Well, it certainly is a compelling storyline, and it's a aspect of the bracket that is going to be watched and scrutinized over the course of the next week, certainly 2 weeks, 3 weeks, depending on how long this thing goes. But for the time being, I will let you get back to the film, exploring what you need to diagnose coming away from Penn, as well as what you're going to see out of the Hawks. And we look forward to watching your team take the field next weekend.
All right. Thanks, my friend.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Taylor Ray, head coach of the St. Joseph University, whose Hawks are in the NCAA tournament, champions of the NEC, and head to Yale's Reese Stadium on Saturday to take on the 11-4 Bulldogs. Coach Ray, first and foremost, congratulations on the NEC championship. How did that game unfold? How were you guys able to pull it out against the Hobart Statesmen?
It was an interesting game. You know, weather conditions weren't great. You know, we were fortunate to kind of get up early, and, you know, we've had times so far this year where we've built halftime leads and watched those disappear on us. And on Saturday, we were able to just kind of maintain momentum and answer each time that Hobart made a bit of a run. So it was a really physical and highly contested game, and we were just fortunate to be on the winning side.
And you've been knocking on the door of this tournament for a while. What is it like to actually finally kick the door down?
It's an incredible feeling, and kind of hard to put into words. You know, there's just an overwhelming feeling of emotion, and you think of all of the hard work that went into it, all the people that went into it, all the alums and assistant coaches, and, you know, just the you know, to be so close so many times and not have it come to fruition when it finally did, it was worth everything that you put into it. So it was exciting for the program, exciting for the current players, you know, terrific to do it at home. You know, we joked around over the years, you know, we've hosted this thing 6 times now and watched somebody else celebrate 5 of those 6 times. So it was almost like maybe we should try and play somewhere else. See if our luck changes, but, you know, really, showed some great resolve for the guys on the team to get back to hosting it again and to finally get the job done at home on Hawk Hill on Sweeney Field in front of, a great crowd of student athletes from other teams, alums, parents, family, friends. It was an amazing day.
Your team has been in the top 20 for probably 2 months at this point. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I would imagine that a handful of folks listening to this podcast have gone out of their way to make sure that they got eyes on you. But I would also assume that a lot of them, kind of their first impression was that Penn game a couple weeks ago, Tuesday night game. There were only 3 games in that slot. And then for another percentage of listeners, they're probably going to get an opportunity to see you play for the first time against Yale. You know, when I look at you, I see a team that has gotten good goalie play since making a change middle of the year with Robbie Seeley coming in. Throughout the year, Zach Cole has been a really consistent performer. And then at the offensive end, you know, Levi Anderson and Matt Bomer have kind of represented a little bit of a two-headed monster, so to speak. Anderson having recently picked up an injury, if I understand correctly. How do you describe your team, and how should folks who are coming to see you be prepared?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with most of what you said. You know, Zach Cole is kind of the household name people have heard of at faceoff position, which has, you know, allowed our offense to thrive. You know, the extra possessions certainly they help you, no matter how you look at it. And then offensively, you know, Matt and Levi kind of complement each other. They're two big, strong, athletic attackmen. Levi being a righty, Matt being a lefty. But we also have some other guys that help to balance out the offense. You know, Carter Page is a Canadian inside guy for us who has 49 goals on the season. He's broken our single season goals record at St. Joe's, and he's had an amazing year as a sophomore. And then Tucker Brown in the midfield is arguably, you know, if I was looking at our team from the outside, it's hard not to look at Tucker Brown and say this kid in the midfield has got, you know, 50 points. He might be their best offensive player. And then Austin Strazula, who's been a fifth-year senior for us, has had just such an amazing season. He's got over 40 points from the midfield as well. And, you know, those five guys with 40-plus points is pretty balanced. And so we've, you know, those guys have carried us at that end of the field. You know, Robbie Seeley was terrific. He was the MVP of our tournament this weekend. He had 16 saves in the championship against Hobart and 7 goals against. So, you know, if we can continue to get great play in between the pipes, and, you know, we have two all league defensemen at close D and Logan Blundell and Pat Clemens. I think we've got a balanced team from end to end.
What do you know about Yale?
Actually, I know nothing about Yale. For us, you know, it was all about the, you know, winning this championship. We hadn't looked past anyone. I, you know, obviously, you're in a championship weekend, so you got 2 games, hopefully, that you're going to play. So you start to peek at the next opponent. But when you don't know who you're going to play, and, you know, I have yet to see any film on Yale. I'll be starting to zero in on them a little bit tonight and familiarize myself with their personnel. All I know is they, you know, they're a number 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. They've been in the national championship game. They've won a national championship. They're one of the most elite teams in the country. So that's what I know without having watched them. And, you know, we'll see what they look like on film.
Well, Coach Ray, with that, we'll let you get to it. We really appreciate your time on the podcast. Congratulations on the NEC championship and the NCAA tournament bid. we look forward to seeing the Hawks in action on Saturday against the Bulldogs.
Thanks, Terry.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Manhattan head coach Drew Kelleher, whose team is coming off of a MAC championship victory over St. Bonaventure. And just learned their fate, they will head to Burlington, Vermont to take on the Catamounts in the opening round game on Wednesday afternoon. Coach Kelleher, congratulations on the MAC championship. What's it like to get to this mountaintop for the first time in your coaching career?
It's pretty surreal and humbling. We're just so thankful for the incredible coaches I've had and the players and the alums and the people that have supported us. It's really cool and, you know, excited for more time with our team.
How do you handle the quick turnaround when it comes to trying to prepare for a UVM team?
Yeah, I mean, it's a team I'm certainly familiar with. I watched a lot of their games just as an alum and, you know, a fan from afar. But we got to get our guys emotionally ready. You know, I think that's going to be the biggest challenge is, you know, the physical stuff. You know, they're college athletes. I'm hoping we can bounce back in a four-day, you know, kind of window. But it's the emotional gas tank. We got to find a way to charge up and bring our passion and energy up to Burlington, Vermont.
What were the aspects of your team that you felt like led to this MAC championship?
I mean, there's so many, but I think, you know, the most important one is these guys really care. And I said it yesterday, and it's cool to care in our program. You know, the guys are willing to do things that, you know, maybe some others are not. And that's, you know, playing wall ball when nobody's looking or getting extra reps in. And that's become socially cool in our culture. And I think that's what kind of got us over the hump.
When it comes to how you build on a moment like this, obviously there's the granular preparation for representing your team, your university, and your community as well as possible when it comes to Wednesday. But how do you allow your mind to like wander a little bit and think about the bigger picture? We've been working toward a MAC championship. We've been working toward an NCAA tournament appearance. We want to use this as a foundation going forward.
Yeah, I think it's certainly hard to manage. You know, my mind has been wandering for the last 36 hours or so, and you know, you got to keep a perspective. We're really excited to have another practice tomorrow and to get on a bus and watch Entourage as a team, like we've been doing all year. But at the same time, you know, it's cool to step back and say, okay, we said we wanted to win a MAC championship, and we did it. And I think it's really important for the guys on our team to realize they've accomplished their major goal. And that goal ultimately was carrying a trophy home from Poughkeepsie this weekend. And, you know, we're thrilled to get another, you know, opportunity to play together on Wednesday and hopefully another one, you know, on Saturday. But I think, you know, it's okay for these guys to be excited about what they've accomplished. And we're certainly telling them that.
Well, Coach Kelleher, we know you've got a lot of work to do, including making sure that those kids that you just wrestled to bed stay down. And we appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations again. And we look forward to watching you take on the Catamounts on Wednesday.
Thanks so much, Terry. Really appreciate it.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.